Welcome to the Above Politics Show.
Like it or not, we live in times of danger and uncertainty.
Dedicated to intelligent discussion and debate of serious political issues in the U.S. and around the globe.
Absolutely unrealistic.
Borrowing money from China to finance the war in Iraq.
From AbovePolitics.com, this is the Above Politics Show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Above Politics Show. I'm Homer Fife.
And I'm Martin Bain, and I have to say I haven't died of swine flu yet.
Achoo! Well, no, me either. And apparently this was all a whole bunch of hoopla over nothing.
Well, I have to agree with you there. I mean, yes, some people have died around the world, which is very sad and tragic, but we haven't had this pandemic that everyone was talking about.
And here's the problem, Martin. The reason people were dying is because they were dying in these third world countries that have the healthcare standards of the Middle Ages. When this thing moved its way into the United States, when it came into England, when it came into Canada, and countries that have a decent healthcare system, it actually wound up being milder even than say like the bird flu. The bird flu was much harsher than this thing.
Yeah, and you have to think, you know, everyone was claiming this was a new world order, you know, created flu virus, and it was going to kill millions of people. And you just have to think, oh, come on, guys, get a move on. Yeah, we have viruses, we'll always be mutating, it's part of life. But I just think, you know, I have to say, our website, AboveTopSecret.com, did seem to go a little crazy over this, you know, almost as, you know, I think some of the craziness that was there for the, you know, early days of 9/11. And I just think, guys, it's proven to sort of blow out. Now, you and I, of course, could be horrendously wrong, and maybe come winter in the Northern Hemisphere, you know, hundreds of thousands of people are going to get this and thousands will die. And then, you know, maybe someone will come and pick us up on that one. But right now, I can't really see it, and I just think, yeah, there's so many other things that we could have been talking about.
Yeah, I kind of look at it this way. If this is the New World Order's plan, and this is the best they can come up with, it's kind of like contrails, okay, and these chemtrail fanatics who say that every time a jet flies over their house, they're being sprayed with some kind of innocuous chemical. If this is the best the New World Order can come up with to do away with us, do we really need to be afraid of them? I mean, come on. I can come up with a better idea of reducing the population than this.
Yeah, and I live over the flight path out of Heathrow and Gatwick to the top part of North America, actually to most of the east coast of the States. And I've lived in this area a great many years. And guess what? I'm not dead. So obviously, you know, these trails coming out the back of engines of jet planes, well, they haven't poisoned me.
Yeah, Martin, you're not dead, but you really do need to get to a doctor and see about that tail that you're growing.
Well, you know, I just thought that was a fashion accessory. I was just trying to be ahead of the next trend, which is going to be tail. So you've heard it here, you know, and my reputation on predicting things is pretty good here because, you know, Chrysler.
Scary. It's scary.
You know, but what is interesting, and I know you and I spoke about it briefly off air, was that they're shipping jobs abroad, and then they're closing down dealerships around the States, which, you know, I've got to say must be a bit of a concern if you've just spent out, you know, tens of thousands of bucks of hard-earned money on a car, and you're thinking, where am I going to get it serviced?
I think everybody needs to take a look at the direct relationship between people in the government, the current administration coming out and saying the economy is not as bad, and what they're trying to do is pump some positivity into the people as a whole, and then the very next day, Chrysler closes doors on 789 dealerships. That's 789 dealerships, and while most of those won't go out of business, they will simply begin selling used cars and or go to another Ford or GM or Toyota or something along those lines. It's still going to put a huge impact on the economy, because what's happening now is if you just recently bought a Chrysler in, say, Kansas, and you live out in the middle of nowhere, and the only dealership that you have just got their doors closed because of this Chapter 11 that, yes, Martin predicted almost spot on, all of a sudden you're wondering, where am I going to take my car to get it serviced? You know, who's going to value my warranty when my dealership just shut down?
And I suspect what Chrysler will turn around and say here, Homer, is, well, there's going to be other dealers within 30, 40, 50 miles that will honour the warranties. And that's probably the standard PAP answer you would expect them to say. But it just means that if, for example, your car needs some warranty work, instead of you going into your town, which is 5 miles away, you're going to have to take a whole day out and go 50, 60 miles to do it.
Mm. Now, this is exactly what I was talking about. I don't have it earlier in the shows that we talked about before when it came to the government bailout money going to these dealerships or these different automotive corporations. This is what should have happened, Martin, a long time ago. This is nothing but what is being drug out, which should have happened, because the government should not have stepped in, and every single one of these giant car magnates should have had to have gone through Chapter 11. They should have had to have revamped the entire way they do things. You know, they should have already been sold to Fiat or whoever else is successful that can come over here and run these businesses the way they're supposed to be run, instead of how much tax money did Chrysler suck down before it finally decided to file Chapter 11?
I think, you know, you'll have people on the website on AboveTopSecret.com who will fall on both sides of that argument and will probably turn around and say, like I think, you know, we have discussed about, yeah, if a business is failing, you let it fail. But then people will also turn around and say, can you afford to let companies that maybe employ tens of millions of Americans directly or indirectly fail? What I think is very interesting here is that it's certainly with Chrysler have sort of closing plants in the States, but keeping plants open in other countries, particularly Mexico, which sort of, you know, does make a bit of a mockery of them maybe coming to the government, you know, for additional funds. And I think, you know, the administration in the States has to be harsh here and turn around and say, guess what, Chrysler? If you want money from the US taxpayer, you've got to close your plants abroad and make...
But Martin, you're missing the point. This Chapter 11 from Chrysler was not only sanctioned by this administration, it was approved prior to going to the courts. So what you've got here now is you've got a major corporation in the United States that's accepted taxpayer money in order to stay afloat because of the risk of losing jobs in a bad economy. You've got that same corporation winding up having to file Chapter 11 anyway. That same corporation is closing plants in the United States and shipping the jobs overseas, and I'm saying overseas when we're talking Mexico, but people know what I'm talking about. And currently estimating 187,000 jobs gone, 187,000 jobs almost overnight gone in the United States. So this is nothing that Chrysler's doing that's shady. This has all been approved and understood by the administration. This goes much higher than just Chrysler, Martin.
I wouldn't disagree with what you said, and I accept that. But what it says is that, you know, and the American people have voted for their president, and you won't get another opportunity to change that, theoretically, for at least another 4.5 years. You may get the opportunity to have a pop at your congressman or senator, but in reality, this is a done deal, and those people have got to say, but I still think there's something wrong about a company taking money from the taxpayer and then not shutting jobs outside of the country where the taxpayer is coming from. At least in France, at least the French government, probably against EU legislation, turned round to, I think it was Peugeot Citroën, I believe it is, and said, guess what, if you want money from the French government, you're going to have to bring jobs in from outside France and bring those jobs to France. I fundamentally actually have no problem with that. If my taxes are being used to save a company in the UK, I would want someone who's making that loan to turn around and say, there's an implicit commitment here. No, absolutely no, not implicit. It's a requirement. If you have to shed jobs and you've got 1,000 jobs in the UK and 1,000 jobs overseas, you close those 1,000 jobs overseas or you don't get the money.
I couldn't agree more. And I think it's ridiculous the way this was done. I just actually found now Chrysler received $4 billion in federal loans. Now, that's a substantial amount.
That's, yeah. And how many, you know, how many jobs could that potentially have saved?
You know, who knows?
Tens of thousands, probably.
Yeah, tens of thousands of jobs, absolutely. And, you know, when you're talking about 187,000 jobs gone overnight, I can't even imagine what the impact of that's going to be in an already down economy. You know, this is going to get a whole lot worse before it gets better.
It is, and you have to think there's, you know, many layers to the impact here. One is the impact on the individuals who are let go, and then there's the impact on their families, and there's the impact on their communities, but then you have to start adding this up, that it's not just focused around someone who's lost their job. It's then, well, the individual states, if you have state tax, they're probably not getting as much tax take because people aren't spending as much money, and then the federal state isn't getting as much money because these people aren't working and it's probably having to pay them benefits. So the impact of potentially losing 187,000 jobs is probably, we may get someone on the site who might come to us and say our maths is wrong, but I don't suspect if you look at the impact of those jobs going to the US as a whole, I wonder if it's not far away from $4 billion. If you think about the whole impact maybe for the next 4 or 5 years, wow.
Yeah, now, and let me ask you something, Martin. In real life, you're a businessman, okay? That's fair enough to say that, correct?
Yes, fine.
So, okay, if I read you this quote, you tell me your first instinct on this. Now, this is a quote, ladies and gentlemen, from the actual article on this. Chrysler sold an average of 303 vehicles per dealership in 2008. According to its filing, by contrast, Honda Motor Company sold almost 1,200 vehicles per dealer, while Toyota Motor Company sold nearly 1,300 per dealer. What's your first thought when you hear that?
My first thought is that Chrysler obviously aren't making vehicles that people want to buy.
Exactly. And isn't that the problem is this corporation, for whatever reason, is no longer competitive. And they need to, if they want to stay afloat, they have got to completely revamp their corporation. And this has been a long time coming, and I don't have any problem with their filing bankruptcy. I don't have any problem with restructuring. The problem I have is they accepted federal tax money, and now they're shipping their jobs overseas, and they're cutting their jobs out here.
And guess what? There's probably nothing that the voters in the states can actually do about this one, and that's what's the most disappointing. Is yes, people can get on AboveTopSecret.com, they can go to the news sites and comment, they can probably hassle their congressman, they can hassle their representative. Shocking truth is, nothing isn't going to happen. Those 187,000 jobs, unless every congressman and every representative was hassled continually by American voters, that's the only thing that's going to happen here. Otherwise, shocking as it may seem, and you could say, yeah, here's an outsider from the other side of the pond looking on, those jobs are going to go, and you're probably going to pump more money into Chrysler or the organization that comes out of the Chapter 11, and you're probably going to pump more money into other businesses, and they're probably going to do the same thing.
I don't know, Martin. It looks like Fiat's stepping in, too. I just found another article where Chrysler is expected to sell all of its assets to Fiat.
But are you trying?
What's going to happen then? Is it going to be Fiat's going to become a huge power over here?
But are you trying to think that Fiat haven't gone to the U.S. government and said, look, we can probably save, let's say, for example, there's 900,000 direct jobs. They might go to the government and say, OK, we can save 500,000. But if you'd like us to save some more, you need to chuck some money in the deal. Yeah.
Oh, and, you know, that's what's happening.
But if we flick it round, you know, and we say, ah, we don't have President Barack Obama, we have President Homer V. Hang on a minute, you're in the Oval Office, your Secretary of State for Trade and Industry comes to you and says, look, we can probably save 200,000 jobs, but I'm going to have, but, you know, Fiat is saying they want $2 billion. What do you do?
Well, I can tell you what I'd do, but I also wouldn't be reelected. And, of course, that's, you know, I don't care what happens. Obama's sitting in his office worried about getting reelected. Me, I'd say, sorry, Chrysler, you know, sorry for your luck. If you can do a deal with Fiat, fine. And I'd tell Fiat, no, I'm not going to boost you up and give you money. If you can be competitive, come on in, and I will approve the sale, because all the sales of large corporations like this have to go through the government. And yep. I'd say, buy them out, do it.
But that is interesting that any political leader or any politician that's the contradiction between how they can serve us and make the right decision, and also them always looking over their shoulder thinking, but I want to be re-elected tomorrow. And I always think that those two are absolutely at loggerheads with each other.
They are. But what's the alternative, Martin? I mean, elect them for life. I mean, you can't do that. No, so.
But that's the issue, is that, you know, our leaders do things, and I suppose that's what's so great about democracy, is the fact that, you know, we will always get people on either side of any argument. And I suppose that's, you know, there are plenty.
Well, now that's true, Martin. But you know what? I think you also have to. You have to take a look at maybe that's what's wrong with the system. And look, I have no idea how to correct it, but when you've got a system where we elect people, okay, we elected Barack Obama last year, and he's got 4 years. And if I'm not mistaken, you commented on this right after the election, Martin. He's really only going to be presidential for like 18 months, because you've got all the run-up to the election where he's of no use whatsoever. The first year he's in, he's just trying to get his feet wet. Then you've probably got a year to a year and a half where he's actually going to do some good presidential work. And then his last year and a half or 2 years, he's going to be concerned about re-election. And that's where his main thoughts are going to be. So, you know, what do you do?
You're right. And that's the same, I think, with every elected leader. You have to think that, you know, there is only probably 40% of their time is probably valuable and profitable. But hey, exactly. There are plenty of people across the world who don't get to vote. And I know, moving around the world, that India has just completed its 5-week election campaign. And we've spoken about this in the past. It's the largest democracy in the world. I think roughly over 500 million people get to vote, or have the ability to vote. And mm-hmm. I have to turn around and say, I think that's a very positive thing here. So, you know,
yes, I think we need a golf clap,
it's a great example just to show that there's a developing country, you know, from where it's been, and it's, you know, it's becoming a major powerhouse in the world from an economic point of view. But it clearly shows to the rest of the world that, you know, you can have people who are Hindu, Sikh, Muslim, Christian, and many other religions, you know, that they can actually all, in essence, live together in a country and have elections and have...
You know what, Martin? You know what? Thank you. Thank you very much, because that's exactly what we over here in our little myths and our little battles, we need to take a look at, because what you're saying is so spot on. You've got all these different religions over there, and they are mixed. I mean, you've got, like you said, you've got the Hindus, you've got the Muslims, you've got Christians, you've got atheists, and you've got people that are walking through dirt barefoot to go vote. And over here, we've got about a 50-52% voter turnout, and, you know, like maybe half the people, and all they've got to do is walk their butts out, get in their car, and go drive to vote. You know, I think India's example to the world is amazing and enlightening.
I'm sure people will turn around and say there's problems in India. Of course there are, but I just think it's a great example of you know, a country that is, you know, closely going to becoming probably one of the global powerhouses. I just think it's great. And then also, I know we also touched on South Africa. They've had their recent elections. And while the ANC did a good job, they didn't get the 2/3 of the electorate that they were expecting, so that they can change the constitution. And they came very close. I mean, obviously, I wonder if someone rounded this up. They got 65.9% of the votes. Now,
yeah, they missed it by 0.1%.
And you have to think that's probably not many votes. But I think one of the things we have to put into perspective here is that... Some previous members of the ANC, they're called dissidents, went and formed their own political party called COPE, and they got just over 7% of the votes. Now, you have to think that if the ANC had been together, they would have been able to get 70%, 72%, 73% of the
votes. Yeah, they did last time. The last elections, they easily got it.
But they didn't, you know, the Congress of the People, I've just quickly checked. So it is interesting to see that, you know, it's always interesting how political parties and factions, you know, coalesce, split apart, and come together. And hey, the ANC have maybe paid the price a little bit. that they're going to have to either seek an alliance with somebody else, or
yeah, but you know what, Martin?
Wait,
but isn't this healthy? See, I like this. I like the fact they didn't get the 2/3 majority, and I'll tell you why. Because now that's going to force the ANC to have to work with these other parties, and it's going to cause them to not quite have that political muscle that they've had for so long. And this is going to give them a chance. You know, I mean, I really think South Africa is moving finally into the 21st century here and getting with the show, much like India. And I applaud them too in this, because the people spoke and they had a 77.3% turnout, which is amazing in one of these countries. And, you know, the people spoke and that was their voice. And I agree with you. Cope probably robbed the ANC of that magic 2/3 number, but I don't see that as a bad thing. I truly see it as a wonderful example of how a democracy works. And now they're going to have to work within that democracy in order to get things done. I think this is healthy for them.
And you're right, and you know, and I said it, I think the last time we spoke about it, what do India and South Africa all have in their past? Oh, the British Empire.
I was wondering when you were going to bring that up.
I couldn't let that one go, but and you know, you could turn around and say in some respects that the US elections, you know, it shares the model that probably you can't turn around and say is out of the British Empire, because you know, democracy, the concept of people voting for their leaders, is one that's been around for thousands of years, although democracy a couple of thousand years ago in Rome and Greece probably wasn't that democratic. Certainly in Rome, that I think it's less than 10% of the people could actually vote. I think you had to be a man over the certain age, and if you were slaves, women and all these things, you couldn't vote. But
is there a problem with that?
By the way, Homer said that comment, not me. So if you want to flame him, just make sure you send everything to Homer and not to me.
Let me clarify that. Look, I don't have, you know, look, I think the system is healthy, but I also think that there should be some qualifications before a person can cast a vote. And, you know, I'm kind of torn on that. But, you know, how about just the qualification that you have a job? Or maybe the qualification that I don't necessarily mean own land, but you know, that you're currently employed and you're paying taxes, you know, instead of everybody that turns 18 can just walk in there and make a vote. And I think that's the problem, and that kind of sways these elections, especially over here in the United States. It kind of sways the elections because you've got so many young people that are out here casting votes that have no idea what's going on in the political arena. Just all of their best friends think, ooh, this guy's cool, so I'm going to vote for him. I mean, do you see where I'm coming with that?
I can, and I know we're going to move slightly off, but it's worth jumping into this one. But if you take that people must have a job, what do you say to those 187,000 Chrysler workers who are going to be let go because Chrysler's management have done a duff job in running the business? Are you going to say that they can't vote?
Well, no, but no. But, okay.
And I'm not challenging you directly, but you know, I'm sure there may be people listening to this show are going, ah, and screaming. So I just thought I'd just, you know, develop this one a little bit. And I suspect it might be one that we might do a show on, and we might maybe get some of our guests who come on to debate this one, because it certainly is interesting. But, and I've, and there have been threads on ATS that I've seen where we've sort of, you know, we other people have spoken about, you know, the right to vote, you know, and there's a very good book called Starship Troopers, which was made into a horrendous film. But if you actually read,
oh, the movie was great.
Yeah, all right, the movie was great because it had some action. But if you actually read Starship Troopers, it talks a lot about being a citizen, and that gives you certain rights. And I would say to people, read the book, because I think it gives you a lot of a thought process about, you know, rights. And a lot of people in the Starship Troopers world do not have the rights to do things. It all comes back to citizenship and all that one. And I suspect, is that where you're going, is that just because you've been clever enough to live 18 years and celebrate 18 birthdays, does that give you any right to vote? I'm inclined to agree with you on that one a little bit, to say, hang on a minute, you must earn the right to vote, not to be given the right.
Okay, then, okay, let's say, and you're correct about the 187,000, and that was a good plan. But let's just say, for example, if you paid taxes last year, if you filed taxes last year with the IRS, you should be allowed to vote. All right, because that means you're at least contributing to the country as a whole. You're not just sitting on your duff. And here's another thing that's close to my heart. You know, you've got people that have never worked a day in their life. They sit on their butts and they live off of welfare. And they still make decisions that impact me. And you know what? That insults me.
And, you know, that's a really interesting one. I mean, I firmly believe that just because you've turned 18, what gives you the right to vote? Now, I certainly do turn round and say, if you're prepared to serve your country in the military, then that turns things around a little bit. And I think, you know, I would always maintain that certainly if you have served or are serving your country, then, you know, if you take this down, that should automatically give you a right to vote in elections and decisions, because if you're in the military, you have made an obligation, a commitment to a country, and you're prepared to put your life on the line. You are prepared to die for your country. Therefore, I think if you're prepared to die, then you certainly ought to have the right to be able to vote and influence things.
But now, you know, before you start jumping up here and making all these comments on democracy and how wonderful your country is, let's take a look at y'all's spending policies.
MP's expenses. Now, we will talk about this briefly, but I know that Homer and I have been talking with a couple of our special guests who come on the show, so we will probably try and do a more extended show on MP's expenses. But just before we dive into this one, I'm going to have to turn around and say, and I wonder if every senator and congressman and people involved in the US government's expenses are as squeaky clean that you can actually look at me and laugh and ridicule me, because I'm sure if people dug into expenses for US politicians.
Hey. We're not talking about us. We're not talking about us. We're talking about you guys, okay? Don't be throwing us off on that. All right.
It is true. We have, recently, one of our broadsheet papers, the Telegraph, for the last probably last over the last week, for some reason got a lot of information about MPs' expenses. Now, some of that came through Freedom of Information requests, but some of it, there's a lot of evidence, was leaked to the paper. And it's basically, they've had the opportunity to analyse all of this one, and it appears that some of our elected politicians at Westminster haven't been as honest and diligent in their expenses. I mean, we've got MPs on the ruling Labour Party. They have actually suspended an MP, Elliot Morley, who claimed £16,000, which is around about $24,000, on a mortgage on his home. And the mortgage had been paid for 18 months. So basically, he just carried on claiming £800 from the British taxpayer to pay his mortgage.
I'll draw you back real quick before we get too into this, because this is a really neat issue, because I think this is going to affect other countries, including my own. Because let me tell you right now, Martin, there are senators and congressmen over here in the United States that are watching this, and they are watching it with a microscope, because they are trembling that this is going to move over here, because you're 100% correct. If they go through the expenditures for our senators and our congressmen, I can't even imagine the horror stories that are happening out there.
And you're absolutely right. And you know, and my view is, and you can go to plenty of websites. I know, you know, the BBC News website has a whole article about this. But I just think, you know, that people need to be accountable. These are people that are spending our money. This is the money that you and I and millions of people across the world, certainly in the UK, millions of people work hard to pay taxes. And, you know, some of the excuses that have been used, oh, I'm sorry, oh, I didn't pay due diligence. If I did this professionally, if you did this professionally, we'd be fired. If my boss or my company audited my expenses and discovered I'd claim £16,000 for something I wasn't entitled to do, I'd be fired. No messing. Now, I'm sure you would be.
Let me ask you that, Martin, because I have an expense account where I work, and I'm routinely audited at least once a year they audit my expenses. Isn't there some organization within your government that is tasked with auditing the expenses of these people? And if so, why didn't they catch this long time ago?
There is an office in Westminster that's supposed to help members ensure that they claim properly, but that there is supposed to be the National Audit Office and people like, but there doesn't seem to be a formal process. And a lot of it is the rules appear to be so flaky and open to interpretation that no one sort of sat down. But yeah, you're right. I'm audited. I'm paid for my expenses, you know, I would sit down and think, well, hang on a minute. If I have a doubt about an expense, I never put it through. If I think I'm playing the game on this, I wouldn't put it through because I don't think my job's worth me trying to get an extra £50 here. But it's just that these people just don't have any respect or any they are just absolutely they are actually contemptuous, to my opinion. That's a fairly hard word, but I think the vast majority of MPs in the United Kingdom who have been dibbling expenses are contemptuous of the British people, and it's going to be interesting to see how many people who have been highlighted here, you know, the ones that, and we've got MPs who are going to pay £40,000 back to the Commons authorities. Sorry, if someone came to you and I and said, by the way, guys, can you pay us back £40,000? You and I would probably go, I haven't got £40,000. You know, exactly. Where does a minister, Hazel Bleers, have £13,000 stacking away that she can pay capital gains tax on the sale of a property that was funded by the British taxpayer? It's just staggering that these people have that kind of money that they can pay back. And I think, you know, heads will roll. I suspect we've got European elections coming up. Whilst people shouldn't be thinking about punishing the Westminster politicians, the Labour Party, the Liberal Party, the Tory Party, people will. And I suspect
I'll tell you something else, too. I just want to make this point here, Martin, because they've pushed it now, and this is what traditionally happens. They've pushed this issue now to the point of where the impacts are going to be possibly even more than they would have been if they would have policed this themselves. Because I'm seeing down here where they're getting ready to scrap the £10,000 communication allowance, which, you know, to me, it is something that's necessary. I mean, you need to give these MPs money so that they can stay in touch with their constituents when they're out of their home territories. Well, they're getting ready to lose that because of this.
Exactly. But I think it's going to be interesting. We've got European elections coming up on the 4th of June in the UK. Mm-hmm. I wonder, two things are going to happen. Either people won't bother to vote, which I think is an absolute tragedy and a travesty that, you know, I believe everyone should go out. And even if you scribble across your ballot paper and put something offensive across it, I still think you should do that. The other thing that may happen is a lot of the smaller parties who, you know, aren't mainstream parties may well get a lot of votes. And I would not be surprised if we see a slightly different picture of European MPs and local and government and local councils. I wouldn't be surprised if we see a lot more smaller parties and independents coming around this time, because people are just so hacked off with these. It's a gravy train. You know, I've heard the phrase said many times. These people have their snouts well and truly in the Westminster gravy train, and they're just, you know, they don't really care. I'm entitled to claim it. I'll claim it.
Yeah, and now I think it's interesting, too. David Cameron's come out. Of course, we've spoken about him before. He's come out to call for the independent review of these past expenses, but it's kind of shocking to me that he hasn't called for killing anybody yet.
And I'm not sure he's going to call for killing anybody on this one. However, the interesting thing is that there's certainly one MP, Elliot Morley, who I understand that I think it's the Taxpayers Alliance have formally complained to the police about this, which now means there can be an investigation of fraud. But I'm sorry, if you've claimed expenses and you're repaying them, I'm sorry, I want the police to investigate you for fraud, because if you believe that you're 100% right and your expenses were above board and legal in line with the regulations and rules, why are you repaying anything?
Can you imagine the outcry if your police or bobbies or whatever you call them over there walk into the house and take some of these MPs out in handcuffs. Oh,
I would suspect, well, I mean, that's another thing we need to talk about, and I suspect they wouldn't do it in the House of Westminster, but if you're paying money back on your expenses, okay, if it's a few hundred pounds, I think, you know, then that's common sense. It could be that for whatever reason, these things happen, but we're talking of thousands of pounds. It's not
tens
of thousands of pounds. I'm sorry, if you've claimed that, you know, Hazel Bleers is going to pay back £13,000, I'm sorry, if she feels that it's the right thing for her to do to pay £13,000 in reflective capital gains tax on the sale of her second home, sorry, someone ought to be looking at her to say, okay, the tax authority should be saying, guess what? I think we need to be having a chat with you. And I think the police need to be having a chat with you because these people are ripping us off.
I agree, because no one accidentally sits down and writes a £10,000 check and goes, oops. I mean, this is something she obviously thought about. And but here's another problem, Martin, I think that we need to look at with this. How clear are the rules? Is she going to be able to say, well, you know, to me, this is what the rules said? And would that be a valid defense on her behalf?
Well, yeah, you're right. And I suspect that certainly, you know, Hazel Bleers is a minister in Gordon Brown's government. And I suspect she said she's doing this after consultation with her husband because it's the right thing to do. Okay, fine. I can't argue with that one. But the rules are so open and wide here. It's unbelievable. I mean, you know, people can claim for second homes. They can claim for mortgage relief. There used to be something called the John Lewis list. And John Lewis is a mid to upper market department store. And that's what the House of Commons expenses thing allegedly used to say, well, if you claim to outfit your second home in London, you can claim £1,418 for a sofa because that was what was on the John Lewis list. You're right. I think there's going to be a huge backlash against this when the political leaders are scrambling like nobody's business to, you know, say, well, we're squeaky clean. And I think that's something we ought to do.
But I'm telling you, there are people over here. There are elected senators, elected congressmen that are sitting over here watching this, shaking in their boots.
And I think they ought to be.
I agree.
They ought to be. So we have pushed time a little bit, but hey, we'll sort this out with management because I think there were some interesting things we spoke about. And I know you're planning to deliver a rant this week.
Why, yes, I am. And I'm going to keep the topic a secret.
Until the show goes out. But yes, we've had a little summary. I mean, we've ranged over many things. You know, we're both alive. We haven't died of swine flu, which is good news. We've had a pop at Chrysler in the US government about, you know, bailing companies out. You know, India and South Africa are countries that both you and I think should be commended for the fact they have democratic elections. And then we've had a nice pop at, you know, MPs' expenses in the UK. And I think we will probably talk with NEF to arrange maybe a more detailed look at these, because I think it's important not only in the UK but across the world. And if you've heard stuff that you agree with, if you've heard stuff you disagree with, come and find the show thread. It'll be in the ATS Mix area. Post away, or you can email to you, Homer or I.
Absolutely, and we try to answer every single one.
We certainly do. So I just want to say thank you very much for listening to the Above Politics show.
I'm Homer Fife.
And I'm Martin Bain, and we'll see you next time.
Swine flu. Okay, this is Homer Fife, and this is just the way I see it. And you can tell by my introduction what I'm going to talk about. Here's the thing, folks. We're all conspiracy theorists. That's why we're here. We all try to take a look at the world in a somewhat different manner. Not exactly like the average human being. And again, that's what attracts us to each other. That's what keeps us centered, keeps us focused, because we question. We question the powers that be. We question the SHTF. And yes, you all know what that means. We take a look at that 2012 and the impact that something like that may happen. Planet X, the grassy knoll, on and on and on. 911 and what really happened, the official story. But this swine flu thing has really gotten under my skin, and I'll tell you why. One, we blew it all out of proportion, okay? It's the flu, people. The flu kills, I don't know, what is it, 33,000 people or something like that every year? Or, I don't know, some tremendous number. Swine flu's killed like 500. It's proven to be one of the milder forms of flu that we've ever had. And yet, when you go on Above Top Secret, you're still seeing people that are kicking these threads and keeping them alive. Come on, guys. We've got a lot more in this world to worry about. We've got a Department of Homeland Security chief who has come right out and called all of her veterans potential domestic terrorists. If you believe in the Bible, you're a potential domestic terrorist. If you're a Right for Life person and you don't believe in abortion, you're a domestic terrorist. We've got a president who's bailing out businesses and taking large percentages of ownership in these businesses and turning the United States into a socialist state. It's happening. We've got talk of banning firearms so that the average citizen won't be allowed to carry a concealed weapon and protect themselves. We've got problems in the Middle East, the likes of which we have never seen in modern times. We've got countries calling for the extermination of other countries. We've got Jew haters. We've got Palestinian haters and Iranian haters and Iraqi haters. And speaking of Iraq, we've still got a conflict over there where our young, brave men and women, the best and brightest the United States has to offer, is still over there dying every day for a cause that most of us aren't even sure is still valid. We've got a president whose entire campaign pledge was run on bringing the people home, who's not only not going to bring them home, he's sending tens of thousands more into Afghanistan. And yet, we're worried about a cold. Yeah, it killed some people in Mexico. What do you expect? Look at their health care system. Compare their health care system to our health care system. Compare their health care system to that of Great Britain. And what have you got? You've got one that's sorely lacking. You've got people in Mexico that die of things that over here you take a pill and it's cured. Okay, so people, let's concentrate a little bit more on the things that are really impacting this society, things that are really impacting this world, things we need to care about. And let's get off the swine flu, okay? Here's a Kleenex. This is Homer Fife, and that's just the way I see it.
You've been listening to the Above Politics Show. If you have a comment, suggestion, or an opposing view, please deliver it at abovepolitics.com. The views expressed on the Above Politics Show do not necessarily reflect the staff and management of the Above Network LLC or any of its affiliates. Thanks for listening, and please continue to deny apathy.